This is Matt Rogers from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
You know when people try a new food and suddenly it's like, okay, hold on, I got a new favorite food.
That's the reaction a lot of people are having when they first try Kewpie Mayo.
Yeah, it's the one with the red cap and the little baby on the bottle. You've probably seen it at the grocery store.
And this mayo is different.
Mm-hmm. Most mayonnaise uses whole eggs. Kewpie only uses egg yolks, which gives it this rich umami flavor. It's smoother, deeper, almost buttery.
Once people try it, they start putting it on everything. Egg sandwiches, fries, burgers.
Chefs use it. Restaurants use it. People who really care about flavor use it.
Put it on just about anything.
Then you'll understand.
Kewpie, the original Japanese mayonnaise.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Information discussed in this podcast may be sensitive in nature to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Phyllis Brewer went out for a walk on June 13, 1981, and never returned. At least, that's what detectives believe happened. The problem is, no one knew that Phyllis was even missing until 2014, some 33 years later. By the time law enforcement went investigating, all of her close family relatives had passed away, leaving them to try and piece together any information they could from neighbors and friends. And, as with many cold cases, that information was not only hard to come by, but when they did, they often found stories that just didn't make a lot of sense. Stories such as she was last seen in June of 1981, but Conneaut, Ohio police have arrest records for her from 1982. Or stories that she was living in the Youngstown area of Ohio, but might have actually been living in Conneaut, Ohio with her father. Putting these puzzle pieces together has been a complete struggle, and authorities are hopeful that there is someone out there who knew Phyllis Brewer and or her family and might be able to shed more light on this situation. There are also rumors of possible violence within her family, and if that's the case, Phyllis deserves justice. As of the recording of this, in 2025, the case is still being investigated, and detectives are searching for answers and people with any information. The problem is, we have so many unanswered questions about Phyllis and her life, but the most important one remains unanswered. Where is Phyllis Brewer? Phyllis Brewer was born on August 28, 1961. It appears that she lived in the Youngstown area of Ohio near the Pennsylvania border, and she attended North High School in Youngstown, at least until her senior year of high school. It was then she transferred to Conneaut High School in Conneaut, Ohio. Now, Conneaut was where her father, Robert, lived. They lived on a dirt road close to Interstate 90. Because authorities haven't been able to locate people who really knew Phyllis, we don't know anything about who she was as a person. And I wish so much that I could tell you, because to me, that's such an important part of sharing these stories, is sharing who these people are, who they were. It seems most of her family was spread apart and not very close, and many people wouldn't know what became of Phyllis Brewer for many years. In 2014, Phyllis had a sister who passed away in Youngstown, Ohio. The Mahoning County Coroner's Office began looking for next of kin to let family know. They had a hard time finding anyone, but they did come across the name Phyllis Brewer, and they learned that this was her sister. The search began for Phyllis, but little did the coroner know, the search was going to be much more than a search for a death notification. This was going to turn into a missing person search very quickly. As they tried to track down Phyllis, they couldn't find anyone who had seen her after 1981. It was decided at that time to alert the Mahoning County Sheriff's Office. But the mystery of Phyllis Brewer only grew from there. Detectives started digging in, trying to find anything they could about Phyllis. And soon, detectives learned that it seemed the last credible sighting of Phyllis was her leaving a family member's home on North Hubbard Road in Lowellville, Ohio. The date was June 13th, 1981. But they couldn't find out anything beyond that. And when a local news organization heard about Phyllis's story and started doing some digging of their own, they also uncovered something else. Phyllis Brewer was allegedly arrested in 1982 and held in jail for 10 days in Conneaut, Ohio. For some reason, however, authorities are not convinced that this was indeed Phyllis. Some of the details were wrong in her intake, such as birthday and social security number, which is why detectives hadn't come across that information sooner. So were those entries just an error, or was this not even Phyllis at all? Law enforcement has said, especially in the early 80s, inputting data such as social security numbers and birthdays were often, unfortunately, entered incorrectly. So yes, it's possible it was Phyllis Brewer. She had been residing in Conneaut. Her father had lived in Conneaut. But why were these details wrong? And why was there nobody that detectives could find that had seen Phyllis after 1981? So law enforcement really isn't sure one way or another regarding this arrest record. Even so, if it was Phyllis, no one in the area confirmed ever seeing her after 1981. There were no additional hits on her social security number. There were no additional school records. There was just nothing. Detectives did speak to some people who knew the family, at least to some extent, and they stated that it was their belief that Phyllis's father, Robert, had likely killed Phyllis back in 1981 or 1982. Why this is their belief, we don't know. Nothing was elaborated on, but it seemed there was definitely some trouble in the Brewer family. The investigation into Phyllis's case needs to happen in two different areas, at least until additional information can lead detectives to one specific area. First, we need to consider the Youngstown, Ohio area. Now, I started looking into where Phyllis was said to have last been seen, which is the 400 block of North Hubbard Road. Sometimes this is listed as Lowellville, Ohio, and sometimes Coitsville, Ohio, both of which are suburbs of Youngstown. Google Maps tells me that address, at least that section of road, North Hubbard Road, is considered Lowellville. Lowellville is a village in Mahoning County, Ohio. This is located right along the Mahoning River in the northeastern part of the state. It also sits right on the border with Pennsylvania and is about 10 miles southeast of Youngstown, Ohio. Now, the area of Lowellville that Phyllis was believed to have disappeared from is about 5 miles from the center of town, which is also where the Mahoning River flows. Lowellville is a small town with just around 1,000 residents and is considered a bedroom community, meaning not many places to work, but rather a town full of houses and homes where residents commute to the city to work. The proximity to the Pennsylvania state line sometimes complicates missing persons or cold cases in this area, since jurisdiction can overlap depending on where evidence or witnesses are found. This just leads another challenge in the Phyllis Brewer case. Lowellville is just a few miles to the Pennsylvania border. The Mahoning River that flows through Lowellville is the main reason why Youngstown, Ohio became an industrial and steel mill hotspot. However, by the 1980s, many of those old industrial buildings and mills were abandoned, and in fact, many remain abandoned to this day. The collapse of the steel industry, sometimes called Black Monday, after massive layoffs at a Youngstown mill in 1977, hit the city like a slow-moving storm. By the start of the 1980s, thousands of families were out of work, entire neighborhoods were hollowing out, and crime and poverty and population loss began to take over the city. During the 1980s, Youngstown also had a notorious reputation, nicknamed Crime Town USA. Organized crime families had deep roots in the local steel and construction industries, and political corruption here was common. The city had one of the highest per capita murder rates in the nation for several years running. Investigations and FBI crackdowns through the late 1980s began to expose layers and layers of mob influence that had shaped the local government and businesses right there in Youngstown for decades. So what does this have to do with Phyllis? Well, maybe nothing, but it does illustrate the difficulty in physical searches for missing persons in the Youngstown area. Besides the river itself, the abandoned buildings around the city are dangerous and often totally inaccessible for people. Inside these old warehouses and mills that have been abandoned, the air is thick with rust and dust. The floors are slick with oil residue and rainwater. There are open elevator shafts, there's unstable catwalks, and there's rotting staircases, making every step a danger for search and rescue teams. Some of these sites still hold old machinery, and many are covered in vines and graffiti. In the dark corners of these abandoned buildings are often drop-offs, pits, or totally collapsed sections where you can't see anything. But perhaps Phyllis didn't disappear from the Youngstown area. Perhaps she disappeared from Conneaut, Ohio. She was believed to have been living there with her father in 1981, and she may or may not have been arrested there in 1982. But the Conneaut, Ohio area poses its own search challenges. Conneaut, Ohio sits up on the borders of Lake Erie, about 60 to 70 miles north of Youngstown. Lake Erie, of course, would pose its own challenges regarding searching for missing persons. The lake is often murky with strong and shifting currents, depending on the weather. It is the shallowest of the Great Lakes, which also affects those shifting currents. And the lake also freezes over in the wintertime, posing different challenges for searching. And authorities have stated that, yes, it's absolutely possible a body could be in the water and stay concealed for decades or even longer. The surrounding countryside of Conneaut is heavily wooded and agricultural. It's farm country. Quiet back roads, barns, old farmhouses scattered between stretches of vineyards and open land. It's really hard to say if any of these areas are relevant to Phyllis's case without knowing more about her movements when she was last seen. Out of curiosity, I did dig through some historical records to see if there were any other missing girls or young women in the area at that time frame. And truly, I couldn't find any similar cases, and I checked both Youngstown and Conneaut areas. Phyllis Brewer seemed to be a lone case out of that area at that time, making her disappearance more likely caused by someone she knew or because she left the area on her own accord and traveled elsewhere. And it is truly possible that Phyllis left on her own accord, especially if there was trouble at home. Perhaps her home life was just too much for her. But it's also possible that something bad happened to Phyllis, especially considering that there is no trail to follow regarding any movements she may have had after the early 1980s. The sad reality is we don't know when she vanished, we don't know where she was, and we don't know anything about her life at that time that might provide us some additional clues or point us in a certain direction. And detectives have checked records all over, marriage records, driver's licenses, social security, and even death records, and they have found nothing. They have also compared some family DNA to any Jane Does in the area and have had zero hits. Now, they did uncover a couple of school photos of Phyllis, and I will share those over on our website and social media. Her disappearance has remained a mystery for so many years, but there is someone out there that might just have the key to solving this case. And truly, any information at all regarding Phyllis Brewer or her family might help detectives go in a certain direction. You might have the key and you might not even know it. Phyllis Brewer is described as a 19-year-old Caucasian girl with blonde hair in 1981. She stood 5'6" tall and she weighed around 130 pounds. If you have any information at all regarding the disappearance of Phyllis Brewer or any information about Phyllis or her family, please contact the Mahoning County Sheriff's Office at 330-480-5000.
This is Matt Rogers from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
You know when people try a new food and suddenly it's like, wait.
That's the reaction a lot of people are having when they first try Kewpie mayo.
It's the one with the red cap and the little baby on the bottle. You've probably seen it in the grocery store before.
And if you've ever just walked past it, some people would say that's a huge mistake.
Because this mayo is different.
Most mayonnaise uses whole eggs. Kewpie only uses egg yolks, which gives it this rich umami flavor. It's smoother, deeper, and almost buttery.
Once people try it, they start putting it on everything.
Egg sandwiches, fries, burgers. Some fans even swear by dipping pizza crust in it.
And once you notice it, you start seeing it everywhere.
Chefs use it. Restaurants use it. People who really care about flavor use it.
Never tried it? Grab the bottle with the red cap next time you're at the store.
Put it on just about anything.
Then you'll understand.
Kewpie, the original Japanese mayonnaise.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That 2-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
March 1997 was full of interesting and memorable moments, not just for America, but for the entire world. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the hit TV show, debuted. Paul McCartney, one of the world's most favorite Beatles, became Sir Paul McCartney after being knighted by Queen Elizabeth II. And one of the year's most horrific events happened on March 26th. That year, when 39 bodies were found in the Heaven's Gate cult suicides in Rancho Santa Fe, California. But things were much quieter and much more routine in the Cleveland, Ohio suburb known as Elyria. Elyria is a far west suburb, almost 30 miles to the west. Elyria is where 39-year-old Tanya Aldrich made her home, as did most of her family members. Tanya was a single mother, doing her best to be a mom, a daughter, a sister, and a friend to so many people. Tanya was very outgoing, she was very friendly, and everyone seemed to love her. But something out of the ordinary happened in quiet little Elyria, Ohio. Something bizarre. Something that has remained a mystery for decades. Tanya left a local bar around 2 o'clock a.m. on March 29th. She was planning on walking home, which was only about a quarter of a mile down the road. But Tanya never made it home. Oddly enough, her purse made it home and was later found on her front porch. But Tanya herself was never seen or heard from again. Where is Tanya Gay Aldrich? Tanya Gay Aldrich was born on February 6, 1959. Now, we don't know much about her childhood or even her young adult years, so let's fast forward to March of 1997. Tanya had just turned 39 years old. She was a single mother, and she was living in Elyria, Ohio. Her mother also lived in Elyria, as did her brother. Now, Those who knew Tanya said that despite her challenges as a single mom, she was an upbeat, outgoing, and very friendly person. Her family even described her as spunky. One of her favorite things to do was to get together with friends and family and sing karaoke. She just enjoyed being with people and having a good time. Whether it was out and about or hanging out in someone's living room, it didn't matter. Tanya just liked being around her people. On Friday, March 28th, 1997, Tanya wanted to go out on the town. She lived just a quarter mile from a local bar called Chris's Place, and she decided to walk there. She could easily walk home later since she lived so close. She was seen by several people that night at the bar, and everyone would describe it as a normal Friday evening. Around 2 o'clock a.m., as the bar was preparing to close, Tanya left for home. She was seen leaving, and she was on foot, and she was alone. The walk was only about a quarter mile, and there were sidewalks. It was a little residential neighborhood, so it should have only taken her about 5 to 6 minutes to get home. The next day, her mother found Tanya's purse sitting on the front porch. She thought it was odd, but she brought it inside, and it looked like all of Tanya's belongings were still inside the purse, which included her daily seizure medication that she had to take. While her mom thought it was strange, she figured that maybe Tanya had dropped it off and had gone somewhere else and would be back shortly. But later on in the afternoon, her mother spoke to Tanya's brother on the phone, and she told him about finding Tanya's purse on the porch. Now, he was immediately alarmed, as no one had seen Tanya all day, no one had heard from her, and he could not think of any good reason why the purse would have been left outside instead of taking it inside the home. He believed, had it been Tanya who had left it there, she would have just brought it inside. It didn't make any sense to leave it outside. It was at the urging of her brother that Tanya Aldrich was officially reported as missing. Now, the struggle for information begins because record keeping in 1997 was much different than today. And I can't say for certain how quickly or how seriously that missing person report was taken. We know that in the cases of missing adults, authorities can have a slow response. And I understand, statistically, most people show up within 24 hours. But here is what we do know. Patrons at the bar saw Tanya leave. She was seen alone, and she left around 2 o'clock a.m. She appeared to be walking in the direction of her home, which would be about a 5-minute walk or so. No one reported seeing her after that. At least no witness statements have made it to the public forefront. Now, the next day, March 29th, her mother finds Tanya's purse on the porch, and it's just sitting there, so she brings it inside. There is no sign of Tanya anywhere. Now, the question is, was it actually Tanya who left it there? You'd have to wonder if perhaps someone maybe found the purse and found Tanya's address or knew where Tanya lived and returned it to her home. But if that's the case, they never came forward to confirm that they did that. If this was an innocent move on the part of maybe a good Samaritan, wouldn't they come forward? Unless they never heard of Tanya's disappearance, or perhaps they feared that they would be looked at or scrutinized themselves. Perhaps it was an innocent gesture, and perhaps that person was afraid. Or did someone take Tanya? Or did someone do something to Tanya? And if so, why? And it certainly doesn't make any sense that they would then return her purse afterwards. Another theory is that Tanya did put the purse there herself because maybe she was about to enter the home and someone pulled up in a car and called over to her. Maybe she put the purse down and then went and walked over to the car. The person in the car then either convinced Tanya to get in or took Tanya unwillingly. Now, again, that is pure speculation and just a theory. It is not believed that she would have left her purse there on purpose. Say she thought she would leave town or go start a fresh life somewhere else? Why not at least take her cash? Why not at least take the daily medication that you need to survive? If she did put her purse on the porch, it's most likely she thought she'd be right back. The purse is definitely an odd detail in Tanya's case. Sadly, even though this was a neighborhood of homes fairly close together, a very residential neighborhood, and homes were fairly close to the street also, ring cams were not yet a thing in 1997. I did take a look at the Google Street View, and the area is very residential. Street View goes back to 2003, and honestly, the area hasn't changed a whole lot in that time. There are sidewalks, the streets are relatively short, and it really looks like your normal suburban town. Now, at 2 o'clock a.m., I'm sure there'd hardly be anybody out and about, especially on a side street. So having no witnesses to whatever may have happened to Tanya is not surprising. Elyria police have come forward since her disappearance and said that they had a few suspects or persons of interest over the years, and everyone was interviewed and investigated, but nothing came from any of them. Since Tanya's disappearance, her brother has continued to fight for answers. He no longer believes that Tanya is alive, but he would like to know what happened to his younger sister. He would at least like to bring her home and give her a proper burial. Sadly, Tanya's isn't the only unsolved missing person case from the late 90s in Elyria, Ohio, which honestly is a bit odd to have multiple unsolved cases from the same city that have remained unsolved for so long. Now, the population of Elyria in the 90s was around 56,000 residents. Today, it is slightly less, sitting at around 52,000 residents. Christine Kingsley was last seen in Elyria, Ohio on June 22, 1995. She was being taken to a temporary holding facility for juveniles when she disappeared. She was 17 years old. Authorities believe that she did leave of her own accord. She was a chronic runaway, and she had a court date scheduled for the very next day. When Christine disappeared, she had no money and she had no transportation. Her mother and most of her siblings are now deceased, but she does have one living sister who is still searching for Christine. James McLaughlin was last seen in Elyria, Ohio on February 27, 1998. He left his medication, his keys, and a checkbook all behind at his residence, and he has never been heard from again. At the time he disappeared, James did not have a car. There is also another unsolved possible abduction and murder in the case of Angela Marie Hall. Angela was last seen getting into an unidentified car in Elyria, Ohio on January 9, 1998. The 25-year-old was also working as a confidential informant for law enforcement in a drug case, and those dealers had threatened her life. Angela had been struggling with substance use disorder. She was known to be addicted to cocaine, and she was a former dancer at Bugsy's Speakeasy in Elyria. It was not unusual for Angela to be out of town or out of touch for various lengths of time, but it was unlike her to not contact her children in some way. On March 22, 2016, remains were found by landowners who were searching the area for damage from a wreck that had happened recently. But instead of finding the damage they were looking for, they found human remains located near New London Eastern Road in Huntington Township. They were confirmed to be Angela's through DNA. It's estimated that the remains have been there at least 2 years and possibly up to 20 years, which would put her at about the time she disappeared. Of course, there's absolutely no indication that any of these cases would be related, and in fact, it's likely they are not. They are just additional unsolved cases in Elyria, Ohio from the same time frame. So what do you think happened to Tanya Aldrich in those early morning hours of March 29th, 1997? Tanya is described as a Caucasian female standing 5 foot tall and weighing around 110 pounds when she was last seen in March of 1997. She has curly or wavy brown hair and brown eyes. She may have been wearing a t-shirt, blue or black pants, a black zip-up hooded sweatshirt, and sneakers. Tanya also has a tattoo of a panda bear on her right shoulder. If you have any information at all about Tanya or any of the other unsolved cases I mentioned, please contact the Elyria Police Department at 440-323-3302. And thank you so much for listening to Tanya's story today. And thank you also for being a supporter of our show and for helping us do what we do, which is to continue to share as many missing person cases as possible, specifically the cases that most people have not heard about. The people out there who need a voice. We will be back again very soon with another unsolved missing persons story. And until then, stay safe and hug your loved ones.
Hey, let's talk about something a lot of us deal with, thinning hair or hair loss. If that sounds familiar, CAPS has solutions. Their hair restoration treatments are personalized, designed to strengthen your existing hair, encourage regrowth, and improve scalp health. The providers at CAPS guide you every step of the way with advanced treatments for noticeable, long-lasting results. And when you book your first hair restoration appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is Chelsea Handler from Dear Chelsea. If you travel a lot with your dog like I do with Doug, feeding them well on the road can get surprisingly complicated, especially when you're touring 30-plus cities, staying in hotels, flying, driving, and basically living out of a suitcase. Frozen dog food sounds great until you realize you don't exactly have a freezer backstage. That's why I started bringing Just Fresh from Just Food for Dogs. It's real fresh dog food made with human-grade ingredients with meat and vegetables you can see in the bowl, but the difference is it's shelf-stable, which means I don't need a freezer or a cooler and there's no prep. So now I can throw a few packs in my bag and Doug still gets a healthy meal wherever we are. Doug absolutely loves it. And I like knowing I am feeding my baby something that's actually good for him. It's also the number one vet recommended fresh dog food made without preservatives or fillers. Go to justfoodfordogs.com and get 50% off your first order.